As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Fernandez with a flick on. Oh, brilliant from Fernandez. And he gets it through to Alanga. There's no coming back from this. Lead to finished.
Well, that was good, wasn't it? Anthony Elanga capping off a great win at Leeds in a crazy game with crazy weather. This is Talk of the Devils, the Manchester United podcast from The Athletic. I'm Ian Irving. Joining us today are Laurie Whitwell and Andy Mitten. We're just talking football today, really. We're going to look back at Leeds and we're going to look ahead to Manchester United's return to Champions League action. And Andy Mitten, I'll come to you first because I can hear wind, I can hear traffic noise. Where are you?
I'm halfway to somewhere near Alicante in Spain. I'm going to interview a former Manchester United and Leeds United player for The Athletic. He played in the 90s, so people listening to this, you should know. He scored some important goals in the game, actually. So I'm in Valencia. I'm not telling people that I know Gary Neville because he isn't a legendary manager here. I'm sat outside the train station, sat near McDonald's. I want to order some food, but I can't because I'm due to this. And if I go inside, then someone might have my computer and microphone away. And after here, I'm going to go to Villarreal Juventus and then going to Atletico Manchester United. And I'm really looking forward to that. And I'll see Laurie there for the next podcast. But it's just Champions League week. This is what it's all about. The weather's fantastic in Spain. If you come into Spain, 3,000 United fans are, do not bring a big coat. Just had official notification from Madrid City Council. In their words, it's piping here.
Yeah, Andy's just been showing Laurie and I the scenery around him, and there's a bright blue sky. Looks absolutely fantastic. Andy, don't worry about us. I nearly got blown over taking the rubbish out this morning. I look like one of those viral videos from London from last week. Most important question to ask at this point, though, what is sausage and egg McMuffin in Espanol, por favor?
McDonald's actually anglify a lot of their menu.
Okay.
Salchichas y huevos. I'm going to try it in Spanish. Well, I'll order it at the end of this podcast.
Look at him looking around, Laurie, just in huevos, case anyone's McMuffin. Judging him.
Yeah, because I don't want someone looking at me like thinking, who's that idiot over there? When you're sat there not having anyone looking at you and people are already looking at me thinking, who's that crank? But trust me, I will try and order a sausage and egg McMuffin in Spanish once we've done this.
Excellent. I could just eat one of those, Laurie. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I've not having brekkie yet this morning either. And like you, the weather here isn't exactly giving me anything to be happy about, given that I'm seeing Andy's blue skies and sunshine. The M62 on the way back from Ellen Road last night was particularly tasty. I've done that trip a few times. I haven't been to uni at Leeds, but it was a very windy, very rainy. It was a kind of 50 mile an hour job on the way back. So, Andy, you're exacerbating my pain.
I did that journey back from Leeds 2 weeks ago, and it was horrendous. It's one of them where you wind the window down. Whoa, what was that? And there's like warnings everywhere. And you see people who are stuck on the side as you go past the bit in the middle of the motorway where there's a house in the middle of the motorway. We need to get to the bottom of that story, by the way, somehow. And I'm glad you got back, Laurie. It looked absolutely brilliant. Everyone's buzzing off it and scoring 4 goals at Leeds. I'm sure we're going to talk about it.
Apparently that house in the middle of the motorway, there was always this rumour that this guy, this farmer, refused to move because they were going to build the M62. And he was like, no, I love my farm, I'm not going to move. And actually, it turned out that they just didn't even want to move his house. They just built the motorway around it because it made more sense with the way that the hills shaped, that they could just move around it. So he's just there in the middle of these two motorways going east and west. And apparently the sheep are fine.
Yeah, I'm sure they're not poisoned by all the carbon dioxide or whatever else comes out of exhaust. Anyway, let's get into it. What a crazy day Sunday was. What a crazy match that was at Elland Road. How crazy was the weather? Some of the weird things that happened yesterday. United managed to play well in the first half and the second half, aside from, of course, a mad minute when they conceded twice. United actually managed to score 4 goals, something that they'd not done in September in a single game. Harry Maguire scored from a corner. The first time United had scored from a corner this season after 140 corners. Finally, Fred even scored, not from a corner. Jesse Lingard started a league match for the first time in 2 years. Paul Pogba had the freedom of Elland Road, and Jadon Sancho was serving up everything apart from half-time pies. The atmosphere was absolutely fantastic. Leeds fans had waited 19 years to abuse Manchester United players again. Some of them had emptied the piggy banks and saved up loose change for the occasion, but they could only watch United become the first club to record 700 Premier League wins. Even Ralf Rangnick was spotted fist-pumping the away end. What a Sunday, Laurie. You were there.
What a build-up by you that was. You captured everything there,
Ian. Thank
you. I thought I'd seen it all, and you've spotted little bits that even I missed. Yeah, there's so much to unpack there, isn't there, with the way that United played. I think in large parts they were really good. That 24 seconds where Leeds turned the game on its head, they were just hungry, weren't they, into the tackles in that moment after half-time where clearly they'd had a bit of a scene too, I suppose, from the manager. And they got into United, and the atmosphere at Elland Road really was on top. You know, it was properly, you know, fierce. There was obviously objects thrown onto the pitch. You know, you had, you know, Paul Pogba picking up some loose change and kind of laughing at the crowd. Anthony Langer obviously got hit by a coin, but responded in the right way by going and scoring a goal and then kind of shushing the crowd behind again. You know, wasn't scared to go.
I thought he should have done the money sign, yeah, quite, when he scored. I was expecting him to be flicking bills everywhere, well, like the Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, it would have been funny if Leeds fans had actually sort of put some £5 or £10 notes into paper aeroplanes and thrown them on the pitch rather than coins. But I quite like that he did go behind the goal, didn't he, Alanga, after he scored. So he wasn't like he was kind of cowed by it. You know, he did put himself in harm's way again. And listen, you can probably criticise the way that United did seem to lose their way a bit. I mean, Leeds are not a good team, you know, from what you're seeing there, the way they had to reshuffle the back line, particularly with Cock going off injured. It was kind of makeshift, and you could see that there were goals there for United. They could have scored more, couldn't they? And I do think Leeds will struggle for the rest of the season. But at the same time, they show character, and that was kind of what the piece that I wrote after the game was about. Particularly in the way that Harry Maguire's, you know, leadership perhaps has been the source of focus at the moment, you know, with kind of questions about Cristiano Ronaldo's status in the dressing room. But I thought he came through and had a really good game. Obviously, he scored that goal, as you say, but also, you know, he was communicative with his teammates, sort of kind of pushing them into certain situations. He carried the ball out pretty well a couple of times, and that was obviously something that Victor Lindelof did really well, and clearly was a strategy for United to upset the way that Leeds man mark there, you know, in defensive moments. So, and then also he actually had a really calm header for the goal, for Bruno's goal. He sort of started off that attack by sort of seeing the movement of Rodrigo, sensing it, and then actually sort of picking a little header to Lindelof, and away he went. So I thought it was a pretty good performance from Maguire, and just really, I mean, yeah, as you say, 19 years of a wait for fans to be at Elland Road for a Premier League fixture. It didn't disappoint, did it? And I think that's the kind of the biggest takeaway, that actually it was a brilliant game to watch, full of entertainment, full of muddy shorts and slide tackles, and Scott McTominay probably getting a little bit too excited. But all in all, a good win in the end.
Andy, I know you weren't at Elland Road to watch it, but you must have loved it, just like anyone who was there, to see those scenes, especially at full time. In front of the away end, all the Manchester United players going over, the manager going over. That's not happened for a while either, has it? That sense of celebration at the end of a game like that.
I'm gutted I wasn't there. I had all my mates giving me updates from the away end on their trip over there. It's the first time I've missed that match for ages, but I just can't do every single game in person. I thought scoring four at Leeds, that's always going to be your headline. There was that wobble for 24 seconds when Leeds scored a couple of goals. Laurie's right to pick out Pogba, especially in the first half, tired a bit at the start of the second. And Maguire, he really needed that, the goal, the celebration. I know he's a Yorkshireman, but he really loved it. Atmosphere from the United end sounded spot on. You talked about the coins. One of my friends told me that of a steward jumping midair to catch a coin that had thrown and catching it. So rather than it going near Manchester United's players, this steward did a fantastic save off it. I thought United were impressive in the first half in difficult circumstances on that pitch. It's a very real game. It was like a throwback. The only thing it was missing was mud, which you probably wouldn't get on these modern day super pitches. Leeds, as Laurie says, they're a weak team. They're providing Manchester United with some of the rare highlights at these times, the opening day of the season, the game last season, and no Leeds fans will be happy about that at all. But Manchester United, they're not getting a bad run together. I know we sort of ebb between, oh no, another draw, but under Rangnick, the team aren't losing many matches, and I know that the quality of the opponents isn't as high as in coming weeks, but the optimist in me feels that I'm pretty confident United will finish fourth. We didn't have a good day on Saturday with Liverpool coming from behind. Not that United are catching Liverpool this year. Arsenal winning. Chelsea getting a late goal. But I think we've had a good run where those teams, where Chelsea have not been doing well, Tottenham have not been doing well. I know that they beat City. But I was really encouraged and to score four away at Leeds. And I was just comparing it to last season. After 26 games, United are only 4 points behind where the team were last season. And if United beat Watford, which isn't a given, given what happened last time those two met, only 2 points behind last season. And I know, again, there's tough games coming up, but you can sort of always look at this season as, is it a complete disaster or it could have quite a happy ending? Champions League would obviously have a major, major bearing on that. But while we're speaking on this Monday, having seen United beat Leeds United 4-2, the world seems a much better place.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, we should point out at this stage as well, there's a piece on The Athletic at the minute by Phil Hay and Luke Bosher because the FA are investigating Anthony Elanga being struck by an object at Elland Road. You can read more about that on there. Also, your take on the match as well, Laurie, which was a really interesting line in it about the way that Manchester United survived the atmosphere. And it was a test for this group to survive such a hostile atmosphere because it's one of the probably the most hostile atmospheres they've faced in recent seasons, you pointed out correctly.
Yeah, I thought so. I was trying to recollect. I mean, maybe Andy will think differently to me and he's thought of another one, but I suppose you've got the closed doors, you know, period where clearly there was no hostile atmosphere.
Not much of a comparison, that one. No.
But even then, like even before that point, I'm trying to think of You know, Anfield, was it particularly bad before? I don't
know.
This felt like you had 30,000 sort of Yorkshire, you know, Leeds fans that had been waiting for this moment for such a long time, and they were going to give it their all in terms of being vocal, being on the edge. Clearly, it passed the edge, you know, as you say, with the FA investigation into it, because I think they've had a few incidents. I think this was the third incident where they've had stuff thrown onto the pitch. But clearly, they you could just sense it around the ground. There was a huge police presence. I think, you know, sort of record numbers for number of police. And certainly, you know, I was struggling a little bit to get into the ground beforehand because there was so much security. You know, I was trying to figure out which way I needed to go. And you know, as ever, police weren't necessarily the most helpful, which I guess they wouldn't know. The media entrance at Elland Road, fair enough to them. But clearly it was...
You mean you didn't have a personal chaperone, Laurie?
I needed Andy Mitten there, didn't I?
In that freebrow atmosphere as well.
Do you know who I am? No, I had to sort of make my way in. To be fair, I left it a bit late because there was ridiculous traffic around Elland Road. And you know, I was sort of in there for 40 minutes. So I had to get a skip on once I parked up. But once in there, it's what you want from a Leeds Man United game. You know, we've talked about games in the past and told people what the rivalry is all about, you know, because it's been such a long time. And this was a game that actually lived up to it. Goals, tackles, you know, really animosity. Fueled atmosphere, and that's kind of the big takeaway that I had when this group has been kind of questioned for their mentality, questioned for their togetherness. Actually, they kind of came through it twice. You know, to win it once was good, and kind of silent to Elland Road. The noise when Bruno Fernandes scored was eerie. You know, it was so quiet, and I know that that's probably because the United fans down to our right were in a section where the noise doesn't really travel that much. But the rest of the stadium was absolutely silent. And again, you know, when Elanga scored the fourth to really complete the victory. So I think you can kind of come away from that thinking that's a good sign. Yeah, they need to show it more often. You know, I do think there are issues, you know, in terms of being able to withstand certain moments in games. You know, clearly Bruno Fernandes going down when he just take a touch, you know, and kind of keep control of the ball. It got a little bit frenetic at that moment, and that's what Leeds wanted, and United could have calmed the matters down a bit. There was actually a moment when Paul Pogba, sort of in the second half, gave it back to David De Gea, and he was sort of putting his hands out, you know, sort of saying calm, calm, and De Gea sort of kicked it, and Leeds had a free kick, and then it was sort of United on the back foot a little bit. So I think that was perhaps an element that some players were kind of conscious of. And listen, I mean, Ralph Rangnick got criticised, didn't he, for taking off Pogba, who was brilliant in the first half. I personally felt like I did see him tire. And then Fred comes on and scores the goal, as we all knew he would. I'm sure that was what Ralph Rangnick had in his mind. More league goals than Lionel Messi, is it, this season for Fred now? So I think there was good signs where you had Ralph Rangnick, you know, substitutions worked. He came on the pitch and calmed matters down himself. Players sort of standing up to difficult moments. So, you know, that's the kind of the way I came away from the game, thinking more positively than negatively.
I think you're right to mention Fred there. I think we should also say Victor Lindelof with his runs forward was fantastic. Brilliant for Elanga to score the goal. And Bruno Fernandes is just a really important player for Manchester United. On Friday, I asked Ralph Rangnick, was he and his players ready for Leeds away? Because I wasn't convinced they knew what was coming. When I looked at the people who were going to travel over the Pennines, I thought, who really knows about this game? And he said, yeah, I'm only just learning about this rivalry. So that was my fear. But I think the Manchester United players passed the test, and in some style. Leeds were always going to be right up against United, and their fans were as well. The ground's a bit of a throwback. The atmosphere's a throwback. Liverpool away and Manchester City away, it's been sanitised quite a lot in the last decade. Leeds is not somewhere where half and half Manchester United, Leeds United scarves sell well. You will see them at Old Trafford, but at Elland Road, I wouldn't like to be selling those scarves on the approach to Elland Road. Manchester United are really, really disliked in that part of West Yorkshire, and I think that is fantastic. I think the rivalries should be like that. I'm not on about the violence. I'm not on about songs about Munich and about Istanbul, but I love the enmity that comes. It just feels really real, and it's great, especially because Manchester United usually beat Leeds United.
Yeah, especially in recent times. Blimey, like you said before, it has been three of the highlights of recent times, hasn't it, those results against Leeds. Speaking of passing the test, Harry Maguire even survived a social media trial, didn't he, as well, because he posted a picture of him celebrating on social media, and some Hawkeyes There's a lot of them about, isn't there? Spotted that a face had been photoshopped onto one of the Leeds fans. They were all wondering what was going on, and Maguire explained that one of his good friends is a Leeds fan. He was at Elland Road. He wasn't in that picture, so he thought he'd just rub salt in his wounds a little bit by photoshopping his head onto the picture. Go and have a look at Harry's social media account to see that. That's brilliant, Andy, isn't it? Love a bit of that.
Yeah, I love a bit of that. I love it that players associate with fans and rival fans in a good way. I hate the word banter, but I think it's an important part of football. Harry's a Yorkshire lad. He's been having a tough time. People will have been on his case. He's gone there. He's scored. He's celebrated. And he can wind his mates up. And good on them. They support Leeds United. It was a bad day for them. That's how the cookie crumbles. But I liked Harry Maguire in doing that, in doing a really bad Photoshop. I reckon he's not learned Photoshop to do that, by
no,
the way.
No.
But the sentiment behind it was a good one.
Yeah, exactly. The worse the Photoshop skills, the better, really, to make the point, make sure that the Hawkeyes noticed it. We need to talk about Jadon Sancho as well, don't we, Laurie? I mean, this lad is blossoming now into a really important player for Manchester United, just at the right time, of course, with the Champions League starting again and the race for the top four hotting up. But he looks at home finally in a red shirt, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think that was probably his best performance for United, given the occasion.
Yeah.
Given the output that he produced, and in the really crucial moments as well. I actually, just before he set up Bruno Fernandes, I had turned to Phil Hay and said, Sancho's getting in really good positions, but he keeps overhitting his passes. I'm not sure he's got quite the judgment right yet. And obviously he goes and produces an extremely delicate chip at full speed to Bruno Fernandes. And on reflection, I think that assist gets better and better, because in the moment you're sort of thinking, oh yeah, you know, just chip it up, you can do it, and he produces it perfectly, but then actually realised that he was moving at such a speed, and he had the 1-2 with Lindelof, you know, to right decisions in right moments in split second, you know, opportunities to do so. And then, yeah, the second goal as well, you've got Ronaldo in the middle with his arm up, you know, it takes a brave man to say no to him and actually give it to Fred. I'm not sure many people would say that was the better course to goal, but actually, you know, Fred on his left foot knows what he's doing, albeit he has scored a pretty decent goal with his right this season. So, yeah, I thought Jadon Sancho really did take the mantle, and he seems, I mean, it's that left side, isn't it? You know, he was bought as ostensibly a right winger, but it's the left side, and Ralph Rennick mentioned it in his press conference, that's where he sees him. And it is pleasing to see, because we did a piece in November when we talked about Sancho, and I think his confidence was shot. I think he came into Man United, a big club. There was a lot of upheaval. You know, the speed of the Premier League, I think, perhaps took him aback a little bit. But from what we were being told...
The penalty miss for England?
Yeah, penalty miss in the summer for England. I do think that had an effect, yeah. And certainly, you know, he didn't take one against Middlesbrough. You know, it wasn't on the pitch, I know, at that point. But he sort of wonder, would he take a penalty in a penalty shootout, you know, coming up if needs be in a Champions League? That could be a real moment of sort of redemption, I suppose. But I do think that he did have a bit of a shock to the system coming to Manchester United, given what was happening with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and the kind of the reports of unrest within the dressing room, and just being able to get into a team where perhaps systems aren't necessarily that bigger a thing. You know, it was more individual flair, and he'd come from Borussia Dortmund, where it's all about systems and timings and relationships on the pitch. And it just took him a little bit of time, but everybody behind the scenes was telling us that he is applying himself. You know, he is somebody that is listening. He did come in with an injury as well, and he had an ear infection, I think, that was quite bad, actually, that he was sort of training with it, with cotton buds in his ear, that kind of thing. And all those things weren't, you know, publicised necessarily, so it's not like, you know, people can instantly understand why perhaps he's not hit the ground absolutely running. But now we're seeing, you know, the timing of the passes, the selection. I mean, that dribble, you know, down the wing, you know, he's getting his boots, you know, white with the chalk or whatever it is at the moment that they use on the pitch. I know Andy's talked about modern pitches now and modern chalk, whatever it is.
Paint,
right, there we go. So then, but he's come away with the ball. He's like forced his way through, you know, a couple of tackles. And that's the kind of wing play that United fans, you know, recognise from back in the day, don't they? So it was really pleasing to see. But, I mean, what do you think, Sancho? Have you always been a kind of supporter of him, or have you kind of doubted whether he was the right guy for United at any point?
Yeah, I think we had doubts at the start, didn't we, at the start of the season, definitely, because he looked like he was struggling. But when you look at all the different explanations for that, I wouldn't call them excuses. I think they're genuine reasons, and you can understand why he didn't settle in straight away. He's being played consistently now on the left, which a couple of weeks ago I was tearing my hair out that a right winger wasn't being used on the right wing, but I'll admit I was wrong. It was right to stick with him down the left. It's almost like these football managers know more than us. It's incredible, isn't it? And he just looks like...
Although his first assist came on the right, didn't it?
Yes, it did, in fairness, yeah. But then you sort of look at the way he played at the weekend and he's played in that same position consistently. So maybe the issue was that he was being switched from left to right constantly. He was in the team, he was out of the team, and now he's had a run of games on the left and we're seeing the best of Jadon Sancho, and I'm excited now to see what else he can do, because a big thing I think Carl was speaking about was about the understanding and relationship that he had with other players as well, and you see that the run that he's had on the left wing has been alongside Luke Shaw, and those two are beginning to build a decent understanding, and obviously then his relationship with the midfielders and the forwards is blossoming, like we say, as well. So yeah, should be a really strong end to the season for Jadon Sancho, and that's a good news definitely for Manchester United. Andy, just a last note then before we move on, Jesse Lingard starting came from nowhere, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Ralf Rangnick explained his reasons for playing Jesse, and he said that he was one of the few players who had experience of playing these types of fixtures. I thought Jesse was neat, he was tidy, didn't overly impact on the game in pretty difficult circumstances, and I wasn't surprised when he came off. But I think Jesse, because Mason Greenwood is not going to be playing, there's going to be some opportunities for him. So I thought he did all right, and I understand Ralf Rangnick's reasons for him starting. I thought the way that he used his substitutions, well, look what happened. Fred was the man, Elanga was the man. He got that right from the changes that he made.
Okay, let's move it on to Madrid. Right now you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. Go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. You'll get full access to all our great writing on Manchester United and ad-free versions of The Athletic's podcast as well. So make your way to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod and sign up now for 6 months at just £1 a month.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, let's preview Wednesday then. Andy, considering you're in McDonald's in Spain, I think you should probably start this section. You've renewed your free 30-minute Wi-Fi as well, so that's good. So the connection should be strong now. What sort of shape are Atletico Madrid in to take on Manchester United this week?
I'm outside McDonald's, I'm not inside it, and I'm on a bus in 24 minutes. And I'm secretly thinking, am I going to have time to order some food before this podcast ends? Atletico Madrid are struggling. They are the Spanish champions. They're not having a good season. Similar to Manchester United, they've been fourth and fifth. They beat Osasuna 3-0 at the weekend. It was the first time that they'd kept a clean sheet away from home all season. It's been very disappointing considering that they won the league last year. They have had injuries. But I've spoken to lots of people around the club. I spoke to some Atletico fans on Saturday. And one of them said, we're even doubting whether Simeone is the man who's going to be staying in charge long term. And that's a really significant statement, because he's like their Sir Alex Ferguson. He's been there over a decade. They've been champions twice. They've played in two Champions League finals. And this is the opposite of what Atletico Madrid were. They were always a big club, but they were renowned for failing all the time. And it was only with players like David De Gea, Sergio Aguero, Diego Forlan, that they rose to some sort of prominence a decade ago. But they're a completely different club now. They've got a new stadium, which United fans are going to experience on Wednesday. 67,000 all-seaters, a really good ground. Some team from England won the Champions League there 2 or 3 years ago, playing another team from England. But Atletico's defence was always their strong point under Diego Simeone. And they've conceded more goals than any team in the top 11 in Spain. there are players in that defence who do not look like Atletico Madrid defenders. So famously you had Godin, and you knew who Atletico were going to start every week in defence. It's been a much more changed side this season. Kieran Trippier, he left halfway through the season. He was very effective for them last year, but they've been really inconsistent. They got beat 1-0 at home last week to Levante. Levante, bottom of the league. I think they've won two matches, and they deserve to win the game. Luis Suarez scored a great goal for Atletico at Osasuna, but he was barely impacted on the game. They played a 4-4-2. They had João Felix up front with him. He's prodigiously talented. He's like the fifth most expensive player ever in the world, but he's also inconsistent within matches. The other thing I should probably mention is Antoine Griezmann didn't feature, so he would be unlikely to start for Atletico. He's one of the best players in the world. He's somebody who interested Manchester United several times, and he was expected to come on against Osasuna. He didn't do that, so he might come on against Manchester United, but he's not expected to start. They've still got really, really good players, and Manchester United have studied them very closely. Jan Oblak's one of the best goalkeepers in the world, but as I speak about it, it just excites me. This is where we want Manchester United, playing games like this, and I want revenge for 91, because they beat United 3-0 there. That was my first European away trip outside of like Rotterdam and Wrexham, and I was distraught. So revenge, no excuses. Young me was distraught. So I'm pretty confident of Manchester United, and I wouldn't have been a year ago against this Atletico side.
No, it's funny how things have changed in that regard. You mentioned João Felix in there as well. There was a lovely profile piece on The Athletic a few weeks back by Dermot Corrigan, who spent an hour with him just to go through his career so far and his influences. And it was interesting that he mentioned Bruno Fernandes and Cristiano Ronaldo, obviously fellow Portuguese players, as big influences on him. And Cristiano Ronaldo against Atletico, Laurie, has got a brilliant record as well. 25 goals in 35 appearances against him. He's only scored more goals in his career against Sevilla. But will he start this game? I mean, that match at Elland Road must have taken so much out of the players, considering the conditions and the emotion as well. Not least Ronaldo.
I think he'll start, won't he? I think it would be a big thing if he...
He has to, doesn't he?
It would be a major story if Cristiano Ronaldo does not start a Champions League last 16 tie when he is the player that's basically got them there with his goals, you know, the late drama that he's produced, you know, in multiple group stage games. And this is his competition, you know, he's won it five times. I was there for one of the finals against Atletico Madrid when they won on penalties, and he scored in the shootout, and he came in through the mix zone afterwards and smelt fantastic. So I think he'll start. And look, I mean, Ralph Rangnick took him off, didn't he, towards the end of the game. There was no drama this time. He wasn't throwing his arms up in the air thinking, hey, there's a goal in this for me. We can make it 5-2. He accepted that, you know, perhaps he'd you know, had his course on that kind of muddy pitch. And, you know, as you say, I think that does drain you more as a footballer when you're kind of running on difficult surfaces like that. So hopefully the guys can kind of rest up. And, you know, I suppose the match being a Wednesday is beneficial in that sense. I suppose they wouldn't have had a Sunday, Tuesday game anyway, would they? The broadcasters wouldn't have been able to do that, but still, you know, an extra sort of day recuperation, and yeah, Madrid, you know, sunshine, Champions League, last 16 tie against the Spanish champions. If you don't get excited for that as a player, then you're in the wrong job, whatever fatigue you might be feeling after an exerting Premier League fixture. So I'm like Andy, I'm really looking forward to it, and it's interesting what you say about João Felix, just because whenever I speak to people in Portugal that know way more about these kind of things than I do, they see him as, you know, the real talent in the Portuguese team, sort of above Bruno Fernandes, really, who's perhaps not had as much success on the international stage as you know he has done in club form for Manchester United. So I'm really interested to see him in the flesh for the first time live. And as Andy mentions, Luis Suarez is another kind of figure that United fans will be interested by. But it looks like a really intriguing tie. You know, I think when the draw was first made, people were probably thinking, you know, oh, well, PSG, Atletico, is there that much between them, you know, with the old weird draw that went on and they had to redo it. But as time's gone on, I think you can see that Atletico Madrid is a more appealing opponent for Manchester United, just given the way their fixtures have been and given the fact that they are offering up chances like they didn't used to. And you kind of feel like in a kind of match of chaos that Manchester United might have a better chance.
Yeah, the one thing I suppose about Atletico is the recent experience that they've got in the knockout stage of the Champions League, which perhaps this Manchester United side is a little short of at the minute, although of course they've got experience in the Europa League in recent years. But Atletico have lost 8 times in 15 matches in all competitions since the start of December. The form is really poor, that includes the final of the Spanish Super Cup. And they only took 7 points in the group stages as well, Andy. They were beaten home and away by Liverpool. But could that know-how count when it comes to a crucial period like this? How do you see that playing out?
Of course it can count. Look at the squad list. They've got the players. It's like Manchester United. When people who don't watch Manchester United every week look at the players at Old Trafford, they go, wow, wow. And then the reality of the people who do watch them all the time is that we know they're underwhelming. Atletico have got top, top players. Another one we should mention is Angel Correa. He scored his 11th goal of the season on Saturday, and he was on the bench until the 80th minute. A bit of a hangover from that Levante defeat last week. He's on form in 2022. I think only Robert Lewandowski has matched his 7 goals so far in this calendar year in Europe's top 5 leagues. So there are quality players. Carrasco is banned for both legs, but Jose Jimenez is a defender who's very, very good. Manchester United tried to sign him at the start of 2018, and Jose Mourinho wanted him, spoke to the player, spoke to the club, and Atletico Madrid just said, no chance. Which is pretty much the response they got when they tried to sign Diogo Dalot as a replacement for Kieran Trippier. So there's lots of interaction between the two clubs. Bring it on, can't wait. 3,000 United fans, fantastic stadium. It's a little bit out of the centre of Madrid, so travelling Reds, give yourself a little bit more time. But yeah. I can see Laurie smiling. We're up for this.
Yeah, we are. We all are, aren't we? Right, before we round off the podcast then, just a couple more pieces of news to talk about, really. Laurie, what did you make of Ralf Rangnick saying he's not exactly sure what Darren Fletcher does on Friday?
Yeah, I mean, I think, the full quote is talking about how beneficial he is around training and at matches. You put me on the spot there, Ian. Look at you.
I'm being mischievous. Yeah,
I know. And I think he was sort of saying, as regards his club role, I don't really know, because maybe he doesn't ask the questions in that regard. But I do think there was a perhaps, you know, he said this about Mike Phelan, didn't he, where he was like, I don't really know what Mike Phelan necessarily does. And I don't know if that's just him being quite, you know, straightforward, you know, call a spade a spade. But I think it does perhaps hint at, I mean, I've said this before, haven't I, clarity required for Darren Fletcher, technical director at Manchester United, being in the dugout. It's just unusual. Like, either you want him in the dugout as a coach and you know, really valuable member of staff in that sense, or you kind of have him in the boardroom and kind of more focused on recruitment and kind of overarching ideas as what, you know, we would usually interpret a technical director to be. So I think clearly the flux at the club has seen Fletcher kind of put himself perhaps in this role where that's where he can add real value. And maybe that's something that at the end of the season with a permanent manager, they'll have to look at and discuss and go, okay, this is what your brief is. This is what we need you to do. Because clearly it does feel a little bit unclear at the moment.
Yeah, you mentioned permanent manager. Manchester United have made David Ornstein's column again on The Athletic on Monday morning. He says that they've finalised their shortlist for the next manager at Old Trafford, and the recruitment process is going to step up now. He's confirmed that Mauricio Pochettino and Erik ten Hag, which everyone seems to be talking about, are two of the names on that shortlist as well. That's encouraging, Andy, isn't it, considering we're in February? United need to strike early with this rather than wait until the summer, don't they?
Yeah, no surprises. I think that it's about getting them lined up and that back-channel communication where you know, even if you don't need to make it official, who is coming in. That's what the top clubs do. It's about planning and forward planning. The names mentioned, they've all got the pros and the cons. And I think that United fans would be pretty welcoming. I think Ten Hag would be the favourite among most Manchester United fans, but Pochettino would be popular as well. And there are others like Luis Enrique with the issues there. I think he's a fantastic manager, but obviously Spain are in the World Cup this year, so he laughed off suggestions when that came around first time round. And then, can you rule out Ralf Rangnick? The club say yes, everything we've been told is no, but if he wins the European Cup, which he's going to do, that's a bit of a tricky one. And then with Darren Fletcher, that answer, yeah, it didn't look great, but no. I think him and Fletcher have got a decent enough relationship, and I think that Darren is getting involved, but it's also a legitimate question to ask what exactly his role is, because he's the man who interviewed Ralf Rangnick for the job, and he's sat next to him. So is he his boss? Is he under him? It's all a little bit murky. But if the team are doing all right and beating Leeds United away, things like that don't matter as much.
No, that's true. If you want to read more about Fletcher and indeed the manager search, both those articles are up on The Athletic at the minute. Remember, you can still get that offer as well. The first 6 months at just £1 a month. Go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. But for the minute, Laurie and Andy, thank you so much for being with us as always. Thank you for listening at home as well. We'll be back on Thursday after Manchester United's trip to the Wanda Metropolitano. We'll also preview Watford. But for now, Andy, go and get yourself that Sausage and Egg McMuffin, mate. See you later. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.